up to Kieran Investments, Mr. Dawson.
Your concerns for this site, as I understand it, are, I mean, you accept, you agree that large areas of the site could be classified as low sensitivity, but it's a huge site,
mm-hmm.
So there's an extremely large area of green, or whatever, of low sensitivity, and within that, there's no refinement as to where buildings might go. And on top of that, the submitter is asking for 6,000 square metres of building to go as presumably as a controlled activity anywhere on that site. So, and that could be 500 square metre buildings. So what would be, given that it is low sensitivity, what would be the adverse effects of that, of having 12 500 square metre buildings potentially anywhere on that site?
That comes down to the underlying character of the area and then specifically the site. So irrespective of whether or not it's low sensitivity, and I admit that low sensitivity from reading Ms. McKenzie's evidence and my review is based on visibility predominantly. When you're up on that upper terrace, it actually dips away, so it's almost like a hollow. So the visibility is not a particular issue in the centre, but it is, in my opinion, around the edge, and hence I've asked for that setback from that higher sensitivity rating. So your question was, what's the effect of having those buildings in that area? It comes down to inherent character, as I say. So there's not a lot of existing development of that scale, if at all, in the surrounding context. And just because you can't see something doesn't mean there aren't adverse effects on landscape character, because then you get associated activity in relation to movement, transport, lights. And my large concern is predominantly around where these sites are going to be located. So as I say, I'm asking for setbacks from the respective edges, but that doesn't mean that there's not going to be 12 500 square metre buildings within... don't have that up on the screen, but within the southwestern portion of the site, there's kind of, to use your description yesterday, Mr. Chair, a boot sort of shape, where you could just put that development, which would not would be an adverse effect on the character.
You've got this one. On your rebuttal.
And my rebuttal, appendix
A.
Yes. So within that, if all the buildings were to be located in that area, that would have adverse effects on character. But that said, there's also a potential effects if they were to be evenly distributed across the site as well, because then you just spread potential development rather than containing it into one clustered arrangement. And my question back to, through my rebuttal, my question back to the submitter was, please allocate or provide potentially a structural plan to illustrate where this development could be located, so I can better understand what's the thought process is on, you know, future form.
Because if this if this site did become an RVA, given the scale of the low sensitivity mapped area, I mean, it does seem to be one that could lend itself to suppose, a mini structure plan within the land sensitivity that overlaid the landscape sensitivity mapping, which would be of developable areas or something like that.
And they would need to be held to those areas.
Yeah, with rules that apply.
Of course, yeah.
And an assessment, too, of the effects of having the development in those areas.
Yeah.
Not just a generalised landscape sensitivity or visibility assessment.
Yes.
And it does seem that the current owner does have specific plans, but they
I'm sure you would have heard the discussion with the hot tubs and whatnot.
It was a very cold day. There was snow all over the ground.
We had an hour listening to the owner as we went round.
Zoomed around the
cycle track on a Polaris.
Yes.
But those plans, which he has in his mind, haven't come forward through
no.
the submission or any details at all.
Yeah, and I took that into account when undertaking my assessment, but what happens tomorrow if that land gets sold and no one's putting hot tubs on it anymore of a small...
In my view, you're quite right not to take account of that because it doesn't form part of their submission.
No,
in terms of what they're asking for in the plan.
Yes, and in response to the structure plan... there's also the point which I was beginning to raise before in relation to Maligans, and your question was asked, well, this is actually two sites, what is the cumulative effects? It goes on to the potential, if it's just a low sensitivity area as it's illustrated, what's to stop? I'm curious around, I think we need to have a tighter provision to stop potential future subdivision of a site, or not stop, but a rural, activity status applied to it so that people aren't just getting the RVZ zoning of a site of this size, because this is not, when you're looking for remote, sensitive scale intensity, etc., what the RVZ is really asking for, this site is quite contrary in relation to its size. So if you were to subdivide and you put a 500 square metre building on one portion and then, you know, the flow on effect when you're particularly at a site of scale.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the zone purpose uses words like discrete and limited development. And would those words apply to the site as it's sought at the moment?
Yeah. Would it? Sorry.
Would, in your opinion, from a landscape, is this a discrete, limited site?
Is the site is not discrete, but there are portions of it which are discrete, a la the upper terraces, and as I was explaining before.
Where limited development could be confined.
Yes.
When you recommend building coverage limitations, and I guess this is probably also for the planner, are you recommending them for the zone as a whole, or for sites, or discrete areas within...
Is this a question for this site or for...
Say you were to recommend some limited, even 500 square metres as a starting point.
Mm.
Would it be for the zone as a whole or for each developable area or each subdivided site?
It would need to be... I would think, well, I'm basing it on the 6,000 currently. I would need to see how that's divided up into what I'm, as we're discussing, potentially as a structure plan sort of area, which will allocate buildable areas, and then what the potential maximum building coverage would be within those. It would need to be sensitively and locally assessed.
Okay.
Rather than you've got five buildable locations, we only actually put one building, small building, in four of them, but the balance in the rest, so that would be against what the direction I'm of my assessment.
All right, that's all my questions on the Mangawira site. Thank you.
I have a more general question, Mr. Justice, and you've already traversed it, but I want to make sure that I want to nail my understanding of what you're saying. because it occurs much more sharply in relation to Corbridge. You said that you need to assess whether the values, rural values, are being maintained both in the area as a whole and within the site. And did I get that correct?
That's what I described, yes.
And in your view, that's what's required?
Well, when you're looking at a landscape, you don't purely look at a site, you need to understand its context. So.
Because Mr. Espy's argument, or reasoning, not argument, his reasoning in a Corbridge setting is, well, because you can't see it from off the site, you're not affecting the rural character of the surrounding area. And so he's virtually saying you can treat the site as an island and not worry about it. It's my putting probably a pejorative spin on what he's saying, but that's one interpretation. Mm. And I want to get clear what your view is in that regard.
No, I had to hold stand on my opinion that you need to look at it in the whole. And just and back to the point, just because you can't see it doesn't mean there aren't potential landscape effects and effects on rural character in that Corbridge example.
And I think it's not that he's saying not look at it as a whole. He's actually saying, yes, look at it as a whole and don't look at it on a site-specific basis. Would you have the same view about that, that you need to look at both?
I think you need to look at both.
Can I just cover that off.
Particularly given that it's that example is a rural character landscape. It has an identified, it's been assessed as being classified, as that rating. So you need to take into account those matters.
Can I just follow up on that, because I meant to ask this question. This area currently is in the rural zone and the RCL, so a characterisation has been done at some stage that this is a rural character landscape. I'm not sure of the scale and level of detail that characterisation was done. But if one put aside for some reason the fact that it's a rural character landscape, would you consider the site to be a landscape that warrants the maintenance and enhancement of its rural amenity values?
Are we now back on Heron, just to clarify? The question was,
would you put aside the RCL,
mm-hmm.
Can I suggest an alternative question? Is this a Section 7? Is this a Section 7?
Well, I don't like to
landscape?
Say that because that's just garbage. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to say that. That's exactly what I won't want to say.
Oh, all right.
That's
you
what
don't want to say that.
Spouting out at me. And I don't know what that means. What I'm saying is it a landscape which warrants the maintenance and enhancement of rural amenity values as stated in 7C?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm sure.
Sorry, I don't mean garbage, but I mean, I just.
I'm sure Ms. Scott's hurt and disillusioned that you've characterised her submissions as garbage.
Well, excuse. I don't.
And starting.
I apologise. I retract that entirely, given that it's on record. But what I find difficult is that if you don't live and breathe in this area, talking about Section C landscapes doesn't necessarily mean what it might to somebody who hears it all the time.
I have no more questions.
Commissioner Clare? You said a couple of times that the conclusion being due to insufficient information provided, reasons outlined, and you mentioned the structure plan, I remain opposed to the relief sought. So does that imply that given the information, the structure plan, the 25-metre setback, the green roofs and the composting toilet, that there's a potential that you could actually see this happening?
I think that, yes, there is. I'm not...
From a landscape perspective,
yes.
Views on the side. Right?
Yep. Yeah, I think there is potential that I could... As I say, that next level of detail where I need to comprehend what they're actually what the desire is for the site. But until such time, there is sufficient information to be able to conclude.
To support. The RBZ is the zone that should apply, given that particular scenario. That's from a landscape perspective, or is there an alternative that could be applied?
I don't know an alternative, but working through this for the last wee while, I have questioned this zone for this site, yes, because given the scale and what they're actually trying to do, and then coming back to the remote character, or one was originally within an O&L, but where that's been parked, but then visually discrete, modified character, it just lends itself to potentially not be an RVZ, but I'm assessing it as it is in front of me, as the zoning provisions and objectives and policies are stating.
Perhaps this is then a discussion for Ms. Grace when we get to that point. And also, just in, I was interested because it's a point I raised with Ms. Melsop with regard to Morven Ferry. You mentioned associated activity movement. And so if you have 10 buildings that are, or 12 buildings that are all 10 metres square, whatever the calculation was, your assessment, those impact on a landscape perspective?
They need to be taken into account, yes.
Interesting. Thank you very much. I won't talk any more garbage.
All right.
We're on to Corbridge.
Right. We could. Well, you could answer the same question about Corbridge, please, that my last question. If you look at the whole of the Corbridge site, which currently is an RCL rural zone,
mm-hmm.
is the whole of that site currently an area or a landscape that requires the maintenance and enhancement of its rural amenity values?
In my opinion, yes.
And rural character?
Yes.
That's good. And as a concept such as landscape sensitivity, which is what this mapping requires, and the whole concept within the rural visitor zone,
mm-hmm.
is it as relevant in an RCL or a Section 7 landscape or as it is in an outstanding natural landscape?
Is it as relevant?
I mean, is it?
It's necessary, but the protection of the ONL is the underlying determinant of an ONL, of that assessment for an ONL. I think it is still necessary to identify these areas of sensitivity in order to be able to assess and understand the characteristics and attributes of the site. It's a refinement method, in a sense, to understand the site, particularly when you're looking back, once you understand what the proposal is actually looking to seek. And from a design sense, those should be the matters being taken into account prior to any design taking place. So, yes, the sensitivity of the landscape needs to be addressed in in an RCL.
But if you're looking at landscape sensitivity within an RCL, opposed to an ONL,
mm-hmm.
would it be slightly or somewhat different attributes that you would be considering, or not the same full suite of attributes that you'd be considering in terms of whether the landscape is sensitive to development or not? do you look at different things when you're looking?
Well, you're looking for similar things, but some elements may not appear in a RCL than an ONL. But within an RCL, particularly if we're talking about Corbridge, you need to take into account the context and all sites. And back to that point around, this is, when we were up the Skippers at the Mulligan site, you are there within a very contained, very high landscape character based on its attributes, and there's an associative element to that as well. But when you're out in the RCL of this site, it is a different landscape. You need to take into account, as I say, its context. So you've got the main state highway, you've got the modified landscape in relation to the farming practices and all the other land uses within the context.
So you go through the same process, you're looking at the same sort of suite of matters.
Yeah, but noting it's not a tick box exercise.
But within the context of each site, say the context of an extreme ONL site, like say Skippers versus more of a rural character landscape, the attributes that end up being more important will vary. But it's still important to go through that sensitivity analysis for those attributes that are relevant in a rural character landscape, or in a particular rural character landscape.
Yeah, well, you were looking back to the RCL, the characteristics. You're looking for the characteristics of the sites.
But are you focusing in particular on amenity values, for example, and therefore visibility, such as visibility from the state highway or from other public accessible areas like the Clutha River or whatever, and rural character, the character of that of the rural, not of the site, but the
broader
surrounding area.
Yeah. You are taking into account, yes. Yeah. That's the question. Yeah.
Well, are you focusing on that, is what I'm saying?
On the rural character? And
well, given the policy context, are you focusing on rural amenity values and rural character?
Yes.
When you're developing your lens, when someone is developing their sensitivity analysis.
Yes, absolutely.
Has Mr. Espy done this for the Corbridge site? I mean, has he provided a full assessment of landscape character, visual amenity values?
He does provide an assessment of landscape character and visual amenity.
What is he lacking in your view?
Well, he is looking at he only gives a very brief analysis of the landscape sensitivity, which is a point which I raise around, I think there are areas, because he only identifies areas of high sensitivity, and I think there are areas of moderate to high which need to be addressed. And then he quite quickly discounts those in a way and says, well, because we're doing a structure plan, we should be assessing the structure plan in the terms of an RCL versus what the RVZ is assessing. And then he goes on to assess the landscape character and visual amenity of what the structure plan is seeking to achieve.
But he doesn't, although he may do some analysis of the overall landscape character, visual amenity, he doesn't then go the next step and do a full evaluation of landscape sensitivity across that site, in your view?
No. This is. I think I understand where your question is going. That's the difficulty between this being an RVZ site, which is, again, seeking low sensitivity areas within ONL terms of, again, referencing back to Mulligan's, there's such different contexts, whereas you do need to look at the sensitivity and the landscape capacity, which is a point I made in my evidence in chief around those matters need to be taken into account irrespective of what you're assessing in terms of, you know, any project that you're working on. So I'm trying to think.
Does it show the tension between trying to apply the methods that might work for a small discrete site in an ONL versus a very large site, which then has to have layers of more methods on top of it, which a structure plan and different activity controls in different areas?
It does, well, tension, I'm not sure about that, but you do need to take into account all of those elements anyway, so as you're going through your assessment, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And he sort of missed out that middle part, the landscape sensitivity.
Yeah, well, he's done it, but he thinks, but it's only been done to the high sensitivity and then says, well, we're stepping away from the south, we'll go, now we're destruction plan.
Okay, all
right. I can't remember the exact wording.
But I understand now.
Mm.
Thank you.
Only one point I want, further point I want to query, Mr. Jones. 4.9 of your second rebuttal evidence, you talk about areas of moderate high landscape sensitivity. I can understand what you call the wedge across the western boundary.
Yes.
But I want to query the northern slopes adjacent to the internal lake, given that that's an artificial lake, it's effectively a water supply reservoir, and probably because we were there in the middle of winter, it was looking particularly underwhelming when we looked down on it. Is the fact that it's artificial a relevant factor? Does in fact it vary? Presumably if they're looking for it to be the centrepiece of a very expensive golf course in the middle of summer, it will look stunning, but as I say, it didn't look it in the middle of winter.
In relation to my assessment, the internal lake was purely a geographical reference rather than an association to the assessment.
Mr. Hill?
So one question for me, and it relates to golf courses, so segueing into that, and of course Hall Bridge is one of the major issues and major nuances is the golf course.
Mm.
How do golf courses fit into landscape sensitivity and their culture? And they're not always manicured, but often they are.
Safe to assume this one would be.
Yes, but exactly.
Yeah. Good question. It kind of comes down to, I feel like I've seen the same response, but in terms of its context, because you've got, on this site already, you've got, it's highly modified in its farming practice, and I can't remember, they're growing corn or wheat or something out there. So there is also an element of, there is an element of modification, and then there's the, looking at the golf course in its context of, they're often in rural environments, which is like a point that I actually contest. Mr. Espy says they're always in rural environments, but they're not. But it's looking at the relative modification in relation to what its existing use is versus what the golf course is going to be, and then what the associated activities come with that. Because if you just hit golf courses with shoutabouts between, that's a different landscape to a golf course, which then has a hotel and fairway buildings. But then you need to assess it in how the design is going to work, because then you look in the context of within this environment, you've got golf courses within the rural environment, which actually potentially could say that they enhance that rural activity and appreciation through the way that they've been designed and laid out upon on the respective sites. So.
Andrew, you say this site and the other sites are very different.
Yeah.
So it's just, I suppose I'm struggling as well with the zone.
Commissioner McLeod.
Let's hope we never have a golf course in the Scabbers.
You wouldn't get much on there.
Yeah, really.
You could pitch across to your hut. Sorry,
Adam. Well, I've seen some interesting golf courses. That would be a hell of a shot. Oh, anyway, moving on. All the way through this, I mean, this. If you actually look at the two proposals we just looked at, Aaron and this, in terms of
where the, they are placed in the landscape, it's not dissimilar.
The two, comparatively. The two,
and this is a totally broad view, mm-hmm. like a valley-wide view. This is Heron on steroids, though, in terms of what they're proposing. And all the way through, we get to the scale intensity, and you mentioned it multiple times. It, for you, was in your landscape perspective, was it the scale and intensity that was a tipping factor?
Yeah. Well, yes, it is. Are you referring to scale intensity of built form?
Going back to the purpose of the zone, development will direct sensitive and sympathetic development. So potentially, as Mr. Espy and Heron are arguing, that's what they're providing, but to a landscape which can accommodate change. So again, that's the argument they're saying. But what you're actually saying is, this is of a scale intensity that it's, however sensitive and sympathetic it is, it's just of a scale that it doesn't fit within the receiving environment.
Yeah, and it's the capacity to absorb the change, which is the point I try to make around some of that, the specific development on within a few of those areas. So
I'll ask you the same question I've asked with Heron. Is RPZ the right zone, or potentially, and again, maybe this is a question for Ms. Grace, I'm assuming she's doing, is there another zone?
Keeping my landscape hat on, but looking at the zone, I question the zone, the RVZ zone for this site. But I will leave that to Ms. Grace.
I would expect you to do nothing else but keep your landscape hat on. So. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Job done.
Can I follow on from that? I mean, with your landscape hat on.
Sorry, it never came off.
Of course.
Shouldn't it be more a beret?
Between we're getting
yeah, we've got enough scarves on. the areas where, say, the workers' accommodation is proposed, I think 100 workers' accommodation units, I can't remember what the areas are, and some of the areas of higher density or medium to high density sort of unit stroke, visitor stroke residential units. Do you, in your view, is that urban development, or an urban scale and density of development, or does it still fit within as a rural level of development?
I don't think it's purely urban, or I actually think that this landscape could absorb the development of the, depending on the zoning, but that by the by, you could absorb the development anticipated, because this sort of these are not unusual types of developments within rural settings.
In this district, in particular.
Yes. Yeah. I could you could name a couple where there's been development of a golf course with associated built form or considerable built form rather than just a clubhouse.
Like hundreds of houses.
Yeah, yes. Well, the first one off the bat is Millbrook, for example, where you've got.
Is that considered to be rural?
So
that's that would be kind of fringe. But that's what I'm.
So you're comparing it to a smaller version of Millbrook, potentially.
Potentially.
Or like Millbrook was when it first started.
Potentially, because you've got considerable amounts of development within each of these arms, as I described them in my evidence, you've got visitor accommodation and the workers' accommodation in a cluster.
Yes, and so you're getting to be a scale that, although it mightn't be unusual in the district, that when you look for examples, you look to the sort of Millbrook level of development. It's got bigger and bigger.
It's bigger,
yeah.
That was the one that I thought about.
Yes.
Yeah.
There aren't many
but this is more of a kind of a satellite or island version of that, though, because you are out in far more out of the urban development than that is in its approximation to Arrowtown, for example.
I mean, I can't think of many more rural developments that have got hundreds of houses. Can you?
There's one that's consented at Parkins Bay that might be close.
Let's not go there.
Where's Parkins Bay?
Glendu Bay, most people call it.
Ah, yeah. Right.
And if I may, if you take Millbrook, and next to it is an application that was sought, and I don't know if it's current form, but it's Hogan's Gully.
Not next to it. There's the hills is between them.
Which has got the hills between it. How many golf courses does one need? But you've got the Hogan's Gully, and specifically that's receiving environment, and from your comments earlier you were saying in terms of the receiving environment there is a potentially at Corbridge that's different in terms of the, and this was to, in relation to the golf course. So Hogan's Gully was perceived that you're basically dealing with Tussock, Rolling Hill, so therefore the imposition of a golf course or the construction of a golf course was an absolute change of lush green grass,
yeah.
Whereas what we're seeing from your commentary, I mean, essentially this could be a receiving environment in which the lush green grass of a golf course wouldn't be a standout feature.
That's not quite what I was saying.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No. I was implying that in relation to the modification to the environment, to that landscape already versus what the golf course would do, rather than that the lush green grass of the anything to do with the lush grass of the course.
No, so. But for example, if you looked at the mowed corn growth, a golf course wouldn't be a massive change in the perception. I'm not trying, again, not trying to put words in your mouth. So if you've got a better descriptor in your opinion, please.
Well, they're going to be different though. But I'm just saying that it's not like we're in a pristine, as you say before, or unmodified landscape. That is modified, and there's definitely going to be differences between looking at corn and then looking at a fairway.
Yeah.
But I'm saying they're two modified environments within. Am I?
Yep.
I understand.
I get you. And the big difference is the guy in the tartan trousers and the caddy wouldn't be on. Anyway, crack on. Sorry. Thank you.
But just to finish off my question about is this urban development, I am focusing here on the built aspects of
yeah.
it, particularly the concentrated areas of buildings, the workers' accommodation and the more intensive areas of visitor accommodation, which could be residential part of the year. So you're saying it's sort of neither one nor the other. You find this sort of development in rural
You can
areas,
find...
But
well, you do get, what I'm saying is, so with buildings associated with golf courses, you can associate them within the rural environment, but which is, coming back to my conclusions within my
yeah.
statements, it is the scale and intensity which goes above and beyond, it would not maintain and enhance the rural character. So to underline it, this is not in keeping, the scale and intensity proposed is not in keeping with that rural character. So...
Yes.
It does. It is leading. It's
away
moving away,
it's
and it's going
rural,
correct,
words,
and it's going
yeah.
to more urban,
yeah.
given the concentration of
okay.
the homes.
And if you want an
buildings.
Example, that's the closest one we've come up with. It's Millbrook. It may be not quite at the scale that it is now, and the question then becomes, which isn't for you to answer, is Millbrook urban or rural? And we'll come to that later on. Okay. Thank you very much.
No.
That's fine.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Jones about rural visitor aspects of Cadrona Cattle Company? Or do you think we've done that side to there? That looks to be it. Ms. Scott,
Matakari.
Oh, Matakari, if I missed that. Yes, because that's just, I was just working through the evidence in chief. All right, thank you.
And Gibson Valley.
Oh, yes. Absolutely right. Matakari.
Sorry, which one are we going to start with?
Matakari.
Matakari, okay. Yeah.
Can you explain to me how you've come to the difference between 2,000 square metres and 2,500 square metres of building coverage in terms of its effects within this site? Like the applicant asked for 2,500, you've said more than 500 is fine, but only 2,000.
Yeah, I looked at it in
numbers, I think.
Yeah. Well, I've looked at it in the context of what's existing on site and what. Sorry, it might pay. Is it Kat?
You've probably got it all set out somewhere.
Kat, can we please get. It's the evidence of Ms. McKenzie. Excuse me for. Is it? No, Ms. Lucas, sorry, for Matakari Lodge, which is.
Right at the top.
And it's page 23. That one, yep. So I looked at the existing building coverage. Because this is an interesting one around this RVZ, it's already got buildings within it. So I looked at the existing site and the existing buildings, and then how they fit within the areas identified as high sensitivity and the balance. And it's essentially on that plan, there's a brownie orange colour, which is the high sensitivity, and and the green areas is where they're envisaging where development would be potential. I believe the existing building coverage is around 1600 and, well, I think it's actually 1634 to be specific. And I looked at the different buildings within that site individually, and calculations in front of me. The larger building is around 400 to 500 square meters, but the smaller buildings are in the realm of 200 square meters. And I looked at that against the 1600 existing. And I tried to quantify adding half again onto the site, essentially. And the way that the site has been currently designed is these buildings are set within the landscape and it's got the vegetation around it, hence my provision to state that should be maintained. So I, as I say, I looked at each of the individual buildings being in the realm of 200 square metres for the accommodation blocks. And I was of the opinion that anything above and beyond, say, two more of those buildings would be above, would be inappropriate in relation to potential effects on the character. Undermining the values in the ONL.
Another way to reason it would be just looking at that diagram. If you were to take out the areas in green, 1,600 square metres is a proportion of the land, and then work out what the same proportion of the green areas would be.
Would be.
It's going to be a lot smaller than another 900, just by the eye.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, thank you. That's a good way of looking at it. Thank you very much. Have you discussed with Miss Grace? From your point of view, with some caveats about additional conditions, you don't oppose the rezoning of the site.
Mm-hmm.
For other reasons, Miss Grace has not supported it.
Yeah.
But in between, have you talked to Miss Grace at all about how your requirements might be implemented if they ended up getting written into the plan?
Have I discussed that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right. That's fine.
Yes.
And I can ask her where she got
it. Yes. We had numerous conversations when I was working through these coverage numbers and the separation and the planting requirements.
And the planting. So it's the size of the buildings, there's the fact that they need to be separated, and then there are just planting requirements.
That's right.
And I'll ask her more about that, but thank you for that. That's all from me, thank you.
Commissioners?
No, thanks.
Since I was so glad to get the end, we'd better do Gibson Valley Station. Commissioners?
Yes. Now, maybe could we have Tony Milne's evidence for this floor chart?
So this is 31037.
Oh, they're separated, unfortunately.
Yes, you know,
which particular plan are you looking for?
Right near the end where he identifies on one map the sensitivity areas, and then he then identifies some primary developable areas.
Yeah, so that'll be attachment 2 at the very, very end. That's the one. You're on it now. That plan?
Yes, that. All right, so... you've supported, or not opposed, this area with the, being identified as an RV zone, and this is the one where Ms. Grace has recommended that it continue over, that it could continue into the plan.
Yes.
He's done the sensitivity of the mapping, which is the coloured areas on there, and you're satisfied that he's done that properly. But then within that, he's decided, and I'm not 100% sure why, to identify 4 primary
developable areas.
Developable areas,
yes.
Which then require another level of mapping in the district plan over and above just the normal sensitivity area mapping that the RV zone has, as notified. So what if the developable areas weren't defined, and the rules as they are in the notified plan just relied on the sensitivity mapping? Would your opinion still be the same, or are there any areas that are yellow but not developable that you think should be excluded for some particular reason?
That's the first point of your question. I, looking at the developable areas, it did give me more confidence in the rezoning, but I understand your point. I would think that the yellow area to the west, up on the top of the ridge.
Is that where it is, on the top of the
ridge? It's on the very top of the ridge.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so that, I wouldn't be thinking that it would be appropriate to be putting anything in that area. And also...
So just to confirm...
Sorry, yes.
You're talking about this one.
Yes, correct.
So, although it's low sensitivity, and you've accepted that it is low sensitivity, you still think it's...
Well, what would come with that would be access.
Yes.
And you'd be going through moderate to high, and, well, not through high, but you would be going up through areas which would... You would need to take into account the potential effects of that track or accessway alone, let alone what was happening on top of the ridge.
I mean,
because that's a component.
If having development on top of a ridge is no good, then why is it? It shouldn't be no sense.
I think, yeah, that's fair. I think in this instance, it's because of its. It would be very visually contained up there and discreet.
Visibility analysis.
In this example, it would have been, yes, and it's a large amount of it in relation to, ZVT. Assessment, but also that. But that said, it's not purely on that, because you are looking at more favourable topography within the primary developable areas. Mm. Given that we're up on the terrace as you come up away from State Highway 6 through the land to the north.
Okay, but certainly, even irrespective of the sensitivity or otherwise of that top area, the access to it would come through at least medium density, medium to high density.
Sensitivity. Yes.
Okay, and then there are those arms that go down towards, to the north, towards the state highway. I think in someone's evidence it mentions the fact that that's within the Gibson character zone, and maybe those are areas where...
That's the green line.
Yes. So it hasn't taken up all of the lows.
No, but this is where the difference between analysing and identifying developable areas versus sensitivity comes into account. Just because it's low sensitivity doesn't necessarily make it appropriate development, because I know in that gut or catchment, it's particularly would be particularly challenging topography in relation to any thought to development. Because it's steep, basically, in that area.
So on some sites, such as this one, you can't just rely on the sensitivity analysis as your basis for development, and that some further refinement of that through the identification of development areas is necessary.
Well, the site, that's where it comes down to the siting, yeah.
Mm. And that isn't a general premise in the RV zones as notified. If it's low sensitivity, you go there, controlled activity. If it's not, you make an application.
Yeah. So I would.
But
yeah.
Some of these sites, when we're starting to look at the really big sites,
yeah.
Like Mungawira and Corbridge, where you couldn't possibly just have green all over it and say go for it as a controlled activity.
Yeah.
So they have or haven't decided to refine. And in this site, although the refinement is small, you still think it's important in terms of managing the effects of development on
yes.
the site.
Yes.
All right, thank you. And that's all my questions.
I was curious to follow up. That does raise a good point around the sensitivity. If you strip away those numbers and you just had the yellow, and I'm saying that, well, that no, you can't do that there, even though it's low sensitivity, it's the appropriateness of development in terms of its slope.
Peak, Walter Peak, Arcadia, Blenker Bay, they are all like that. And notified by the council as being like that. And Arcadia is, we've just been told, it's a highly sensitive landscape.
Mr. Jones, just looking at that plan, there are only two aspects of the visual, Mr. Milne's visual analysis that you've largely agreed with. I want to query. The first relates to the visibility of Area 2 from Culpit Road.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that should give us cause for pause. So answer me that, because like on our site visit, we stopped, we stood on the edge of the road, and you could have, well, we had the impression you could look over from the road, look over most of that site.
Yes.
And which is supported by Mr. Milne's ZVT analysis. So what are the characteristics of that area, notwithstanding that the visibility from a public space, being the road, that cause you to bear the view it's still of low sensitivity?
Even though it's within a publicly accessible road, it is the frequency or number of users along that edge. And in its current zoning, that development, you can have development within this site. So there was nothing to stop that particular upper portion for development to be taking place. So this is kind of refining down as to where that development...
Because it's in the Gibson character site.
GCZ, yeah. Nothing precluding development in that space currently.
And the second query is the visibility from the lookout points on the Crown Range Road. We stood up there and were trying to figure out which particular terraces, because they're like a row of them. And I think we referenced it to the rural residential development on the on the right hand side behind a big belt of a big shelter belt.
Yes.
And we were trying to visualise, well, what if it were developed, how visible would it be? Like it's a long way, it's obviously several kilometres.
Yeah, so it would be seen within the context of that existing landscape pattern. And by landscape pattern, I mean the literal topographical features, and then also the modification and existing development, such as the rural residential site immediately to the east, and then all the development on the lower basin. But within this upper portion, the scale of development which is anticipated and agreed by and large by the submitter at that 500 square metres would be is an appropriate outcome in this for this, if this were to be an RVZ in this ONL.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Thank you.
Mr. McLeod.
Nothing for me, thanks.
Hello, Mr. De Moura.
No,
I think that's good to go. Thank you very much for your assistance, as the Commissioner said.
Thank you.
Had a big job with so many of these RVZs. I'm wondering, given the time and Mr. Ross's plane, whether he should be next unless Gilbert's going to elbow him out of the way.
No, we would be grateful for that. Thank you. Just while Mr. Rossiter sets himself up, I thought I'd draw the panel's attention to one of the reports from Heronstream, the Herons on the Wachtapu Basin. There was some discussion about resorts and different resorts across the district. And in the Wachtapu Basin Heronstream, there was some consideration, it was referred to the Hills, Hogan's Gully, etc., as to whether the proposals being put forward were resorts. And this is covered in paragraphs 90 through to 92. And what I wanted to just draw to the panel's attention was the conclusion, essentially, well, a reference to the evidence that was heard, that the character of Millbrook Resort has changed over time as it has grown in size, such that it would probably not be considered a resort if constructed today. So that is in the context of a number of rezoning submissions also seeking to become a resort, and whether they meet the definition. And the panel at that time was considering whether the use of buildings had to be locked in for visitor accommodation use, rather than leaving it open for them to become just residential in the future.
And you could also refer to the report on the Hills proposal that ultimately rejected that proposal because of the lack of surety that what they were proposing was a resort as defined.
That's absolutely correct.
What's the number of the report?
Stream 14.
Stream 14, and it's report 18-7.
And presumably, when they say that it might not be considered as a resort, they're not saying it's gone back to being rural. They're really saying the next step is urban.
That's correct. Yes.
And so that, and that was as a result of both the scale of the built form as well as the nature of the uses not being visitor accommodation, or was it more to do with just the use?
I believe both. It's not explicit in this part of the decision.
Okay.
It was a complex set of rezonings because the Hills and Hogan Gully were, I think, essentially seeking to use Millbrook as an example of what should be allowed for them. And now we're working through the Environment Court on those other two proposals.
So So, I mean, that was sort of what Mr. Jones was doing, but maybe comparing it with what Millbrook isn't now, but maybe what it was before
yes.
it changed over time.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned this in my legal submissions earlier in the week, and I expressed some caution as to whether Millbrook was the right example.
But for that reason.
To look at. That's
yeah,
right.
That,
because
yeah.
it's morphed over time.
It has.
Well, perhaps it's a cautionary tale.
But there were no other examples have been given of the rural development of the scale proposed through the Corbridge discussion.
Not that are developed.
Not by Mr. Jones.
No, that's correct. I did mention yesterday if it's helpful in terms of the new Gibston resort zone. And the provisions that have come through a consent order.
I think that would be helpful.
We could provide that.
Well, we're working on a list of additional documents. Suffice it to say that consent order is one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so turning to Mr. Rossiter, just so you've got the right evidence in front of you. His second statement of evidence, of course with Mr. Smith's name on it, to do with the Upper Clutha Transport rezoning submission. You have his rebuttal evidence dated 12th of June, and in that he addresses Gibston Valley Station and the Matakari Lodge, and then a separate rebuttal statement for the Universal Development submission. So you will hopefully also have a copy of the highlights summary. It does cover some of these sites.
So, please proceed.
I'll begin with the RVZ responses. In relation to Gibston Valley, the use of a level of service threshold for the state highway intersections of level of service D to E will result in impacts that are unacceptable for the intersection form and, in our opinion, would not be acceptable from a safe systems or a Vision Zero, which is perspective, by the Road Controlling Authority, WACA Katahi NZTA. Mechanism for the trigger for any proposed upgrade has not been considered or explored, nor the mechanism of how or who would subsidise the required improvements. In the absence of this, I do not support the submission for rezoning. For Matakari, the existing right-of-way intersection with the Glenorchy Queenstown Road is substandard and is not suitable for the requested rezoning. I agree with Mr. Smith's assessment that the mitigation measures proposed by the submitter are unsafe. I'll move on to the settlement zone submissions and the universal development at Hawea. Relying on Mr. Carr's modelling of effects and considering the intersection forms required to mitigate them, I'm of the opinion that his assessment fails to address many of the issues which could prohibit the formation of suitably designed, compliant intersection forms. I consider that there are land issues that, if not addressed now, could prevent the formation of a compliant intersection forms at the Domain Road, Capital Avenue, Hawea Control Structure Road Junction, along with the Domain Road, Cemetery Road Junction. This would burden QLDC with serious and ongoing road safety issues in the future. I should add at this point, I've also looked at some of this statement in Mr. Carr's evidence where he says things like queuing at the State Highway 6 intersection is negligible, which I would disagree with, and I would imagine improvements to that intersection would also be required. Overall, I agree with Mr. Smith's assessment and would not support the rezoning. There is one in relation to the Lake Mackay submission for rezoning, which is the Atkins Road in Luggett. This is one we would support. We consider that there is a trigger available through a subdivision at subdivision stage which would allow for the necessary road upgrades to be implemented. There would be a need for the speed limit on the state highway to be extended, but that could be done as an extension of the urban limit. Happy to take questions.
Commissioner Dawson.
Could I start with the Gibson Valley? Seeing you did. This is one that Ms. Grace is recommending be taken forward into a rezoning, but you still don't fully support it at all because of a lack of any sort of resolution to the issue of how to deal with the upgrades that would be needed at whether the side roads, I'm not sure if it's both of them or one of them, meet the state highway. Have you discussed this with Ms. Grace as to whether a mechanism can or has or should be put into the zone to achieve such a trigger?
I haven't had an opportunity
no.
to.
I don't
know if Mr. Smith had.
No.
Our concern primarily with this one is that the intersection form that would be required for safe access in a rural location is a roundabout. On a high-speed road, a roundabout diameter needs to be probably 30 metres plus, which cannot be achieved within land that is under council's control. So you're in a position of allowing or potentially allowing for a development of land but requiring an intersection upgrade which is reliant on third party land.
And one thing that occurred to me is that because this is a rural visitor zone, not a settlement zone, it's possible there may not be any subdivision involved, but the one landowner might develop all the facilities as visitor accommodation or visitor activities. So that subdivision trigger for capturing contributions or insisting on certain road upgrades may not be there.
Yeah.
Does that reinforce the need for either the matter to be thought through in advance or a very easily to implement trigger being put into the rules?
Well, there would need to be, I think there needs to be consideration of what the trigger would be, where it sits, and obviously myself and Mr. Smith are in agreement that the trigger for that threshold should be much sooner than Mr. Carr has suggested in his evidence. There will be a need for approval by NZTA, but we still come back to this issue that the size of roundabout that would be required to provide safe access would require land that is not under the submitter's control or council control.
Yes, so there's no surety that a solution could be found.
Yes.
And that theme comes up in several of the different sites you've looked at.
In each of the three.
Industrial or
Well, in each of the three cases we was discussing this morning, that's the same case.
At Matakori, I'm moving on here.
We'll just keep going. Just
shall I keep going?
Yeah. Keep swinging with it.
At Matakori, the situation, as I understand your assessment, is a little bit more grave in that the you're saying that the suggestion put forward by the landscape architect in that one. I can't remember who it was.
Ms. Lucas.
No, sorry, not the landscape. I've got to talk about traffic engineer now. is actually that the intersection is actually unsafe, and that the solution suggested by the submitter is also unsafe. Couldn't be implemented. If it was implemented, would have unsafe repercussions in the wider network or on that site or even beyond it. And that there really is no safe solution that's been identified for that site.
I'd agree. The sight lines at that intersection, or the access, are constrained. They're less than desirable. And again, trying to do improvements on land that is not owned by the submitter. In that case, I think it's stock land. So
good luck.
So it represents another challenge for widening the road to the standard that would be required.
And that even applies to the land that's required for, say, a passing bay.
Yes.
Yes, it's dock land. It would require dock land.
Yes.
Because the accessway is only about 6 metres wide, if I recall.
Yes.
So then my question becomes the level of additional development on that site that the zone might provide for, particularly if we take up Mr. Jones's recommendations, isn't great. It might be two more 200 square metre buildings. I think the submitter has suggested 18 additional guests over whatever they have allowance for at the moment. So, I mean, there's a current problem. Would an additional capacity for 18 more guests exacerbate that problem or increase the risk?
It will. It's a small increase. But it takes you, in terms of the traffic volumes and council standards, we should be looking at a higher standard of access lane. The acute angle and the change in grade that occurs at the intersection causes problems for vehicles entering and exiting now. So it doesn't seem prudent, again, particularly looking at it from a safe systems perspective, why would we encourage more vehicles, more movement at somewhere which is already potentially unsafe and ideally should be improved?
Thank you for that. That's all my questions on that one. Yes, I think, I mean, you know, I could ask you lots of questions about the universal development and how but I think your evidence is actually very clear, so I don't, thank you very much. And so I don't want to ask you any questions on how we are. Thank you.
Mr. Hill? Mr. McLeod?
Just one question with the universal developments. There's discussion at the end about a roundabout on the downside. That's progressive. Does that alter or change? Or I don't know what level that is progressing.
When you say it's progressing.
Progressing in that the Awea Community Association, the Wanaka Community Board, and an NZTA representative have met on site, and that was with the, exactly that discussion in mind. Now, I don't know the outcomes of that, so that's all I can say in terms of the progress. If a roundabout was to be, does that alter significantly any of the considerations?
I think if it's possible to put a roundabout at the top of Domain Road, that addresses one of the concerns. The Cemetery Road one, there is still an issue with land. There's the submitted evidence, and so it doesn't address anything about the State Highway 6 intersection. The bit that I picked up on there was the modelling suggests queue lengths on the state highway of 7 vehicles turning right. Now, 7 vehicle queue in a right turn bay that isn't 7 vehicles long means that you've potentially got a safety risk. So while they may not be there very long, there's still a safety risk. And that hasn't been discussed.
Yeah.
I know in the discussions that I've had previously with Mr. Smith, and said one of the things that doesn't come up on this or hasn't been mentioned anywhere is the resilience of the road network that we're talking about here. If you add another 1,000 households into the Hawea Township, and I think it's more than 1,000, being reliant on one access road in and out, or one primary access road, to me doesn't seem a sound way forward. I appreciate there is an alternate route, but it's a long diversion if that control structure road was ever obstructed. And there doesn't seem to have been any consideration of that.
And it's a long diversion over a single lane bridge?
Yes.
Because that was one thing that cast my mind back to when SHA was going through its ructions, and NZTA had no issues. No, they were fully supportive of the SHA in terms of the Domain Road intersection, the State Highway connection.
To smaller scale, the size of what potentially could happen now is several times larger than just the SHA.
So it's that increase in scale that,
yeah,
in your perspective, just adds the extra complexity.
Well, it increases the risk of an event happening on a short section of road, particularly, again, if I come back to the analysis, Mr. Carr's analysis, suggesting, queues of 15 vehicles on the control structure road. So while it might be moving, except because there's not a lot of traffic on State Highway 6, once you've got queuing and that little bit of congestion, even if you're just getting little nose-to-tail crashes occurring, there's always the potential for bigger or other things to happen. And so that comes back to this question about is allowing or enabling the level of development that's being proposed sensible when you're relying on essentially a single road.
And one further, is there an added level of complexity given that the highway that is the receiving environment is essentially a tourist highway? I'm not trying to point the finger at any level of driving being associated with visitors to this fine country, but predominantly that West Coast route, that highway is a tourist route. Does that add any extra complexity?
I think in that location it's probably not too much complexity. It would depend more on the level of visitor accommodation that starts to appear within all the new housing that might occur, and whether that represents a bigger risk at the state highway rather than the traffic that's just travelling south generally.
I know because it does come down to actions and consequences. I know for example when the Freedom Camping Hub went in at the Red Bridge, it significantly increased the traffic down Cemetery Road to Main Road because that was the shortest route in GPS. Thank you very much for your evidence.
One question only for me, Mr. Roster. So let me get this right. Mr. Smith's second rebuttal evidence. Refers to potential interruption of delivery of electricity supply to the electrical grid. Given that there's no generation, there's no turbines in that dam, I was wondering how that could possibly be. You're saying the dam's going to fail?
I think that's possibly where the thinking was, but I couldn't clarify more. I hadn't spoken with Mr. Smith specifically on that.
Or possibly Mr. Smith assumed there was generation, but was I incorrect?
I think it's probably an assumption that it had there is some effect on the supply because the land is all zoned or is owned by. Marked as being owned as electricity.
Thank you, Mr. Rolston. I say you better run for your place.
Thank you for accommodating me.
Right, next we have Ms. Gilbert. So back to landscape. Ms. Gilbert has prepared two statements, the first in chief dated 18th of March. And one statement of rebuttal dated 12th of June. And of course, a summary.
And we have the summary?
We have the summary. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I might start with my summary statement, and there's one correction I'd like to make to my rebuttal evidence. Would you prefer me to do that first, or?
Why don't we fix your rebuttal first?
Sure. It's rather a glaring error. On paragraph 4.8, my maths was particularly appalling, where I'm talking about the percentage change in building coverage between the existing building.
1400.
Yes, that's right.
I got 1400.
Yeah.
1450%.
I thought the easiest way to articulate it for the panel might be that it's over 15 times the existing building coverage that's being sought here. Okay, so returning to my summary statement, I have provided landscape evidence on RVZ rezoning submissions. I do not support the refined RVZ relief sought for Loch Linney and Lake Hawea Holiday Park. Overall, I consider that the development of an appropriate RVZ policy regime for each of these effectively greenfield RVZ areas needs to be landscape-led. In my view, this requires a thorough landscape assessment to give confidence that the character of landscape change associated with the RVZ will satisfy the fundamental landscape policy requirements in ONLs that development protects landscape values and is reasonably difficult to see. In my experience, and considering a range of developments within areas that display similar landscape sensitivities to each of these sites, it is my expectation that an appropriate RVZ policy regime for the Loch Linney and Lake Hawea holiday sites would include a location-specific structure plan that responds to the landscape opportunities and constraints identified in my evidence in chief, and, at a minimum, a restricted discretionary activity status for buildings. However, I understand from the burdens evidence that there is a strong desire to minimise more complex consenting requirements and therefore have turned my mind to the sort of RVZ activity that might be appropriate on the Lake Hawea Holiday Park site as a controlled activity. My rebuttal evidence sets out the parameters that could shape an appropriate RVZ development outcome in that location. I do not support the rezoning request sought by Universal Developments for land on the south side of Hawea. In particular, I consider that the proposed rezoning will not deliver defensible edges along the southern side of Hawea, and in so doing will make the surrounding rural area vulnerable to development creep. The proposed rezoning will generate adverse visual amenity effects along its eastern side, which includes an amenity landscape. The proposed rezoning will adversely impact on landscape character as a consequence of the above adverse outcomes, edge treatments and visual effects, together with my view that the scale of expansion will undermine the perception of Hawea as a relatively small-scale and old-school lakeside settlement, thus suggesting adverse effects in relation to settlement identity and sense of place. I note that the Hawea Community Association submission seeks the retention of the notified urban growth boundary to preserve the special character of the lakeside settlement. I infer from the submission that the community association consider that the proposed structure plan would detract from the identity of their settlement, which speaks to an adverse effect with respect to the aspects of landscape character that take in shared and recognised values and amenity values. However, it is also my opinion that the horse is somewhat bolted in relation to a change in landscape character throughout the northern portion of the Universal Developments site as a consequence of the character of development that is likely to occur at Domain Acres and throughout the consented SHA area. Were the panel minded to upzone land to the south of Hawea, my rebuttal evidence sets out the parameters that could shape an appropriate urban expansion outcome from the landscape perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Before I hand over to Mr. Dawson, I have a preliminary question that relates to your quoting, as did, I think, Mr. Jones, the NZILA practice notes on landscape capacity,
yes,
and landscape sensitivity, 4.13. There is a difference between the definition that the Environment Court has signalled will be inserted into Chapter 3 of landscape sensitivity, the landscape capacity rather, and this definition, and the difference is the word substantially, which is not in the Chapter 3 definition. And as a preliminary thought, rather than you give me a general answer, can I suggest that you ponder what, if any, if you've got a quick answer, that's good, but if otherwise, to suggest what difference the lack of a qualifier would make to your assessment if we were to ask you, well, applying the Chapter 3 definition, what difference does it make?
I think I can answer that quite quickly, in that I referred to the best practice note because it talks about both landscape capacity and landscape sensitivity within the same document. My understanding of the court's definition of landscape capacity is within the context of the Queenstown Lakes District, whereas the NZILA best practice note is a very generic document that is not at all specific to the district. And just to confirm, whilst I've provided you with this definition, in terms of my thinking, when I've looked at the two RVZ sites, I have applied, if you like, the more restrictive threshold that I believe the court has directed in the Topic 2 decision in omitting the word substantially.
If so, that would be in the good answer category.
Thank you. What order would you like to do them?
Your choice. Flip a coin.
Okay.
Start with the JIS and move from there.
Let's do Universal at the end.
Yep.
Do that separately. Lock Limit.
Yes. Sounds good.
We've visited both the sites on the Lock Limit. As I understand your concerns, and I just want to make sure I've got them right, because there are so many of these sites, there's still no thorough or detailed assessment of landscape sensitivity across either of these sites. Is that one of your concerns?
Yes, correct.
Looking at visibility analysis and contours and all of the different aspects, that hasn't been fully done.
Absolutely. So Mr. Espy has had a crack at it, if you like, but in my opinion, the base material that he's had to rely on to inform that sensitivity analysis is inadequate.
Yes. So he's done something.
Yeah.
And he's done, and the map's got colours on it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He hasn't done it. The base work that's usually required in terms of normal requirements hasn't been done.
That's correct. I mean, one of the fundamentals is the contour.
Yes.
Information.
I mean, and your another concern is that you think he has underestimated the sensitivity in relation to views from the lake.
Yes.
Because he has photos taken from the lake.
He has for the Y Creek site, which is the northern site, nothing for the what's called the Loch Linney site, which is by the homestead further down towards Kingston.
And an analysis of that would feed into the sensitivity analysis, the landscape.
Absolutely.
So
I mean, the amenity of those two sites relates strongly to the views out over the lake.
I mean, you have a comment about there might be a huge amount of boating activity going on there now, but that could change in the future, and you mentioned the Homestead Bay.
Yes, the Homestead Bay, which is at the south end
of
Jack's Point. A marina is anticipated there.
So do you envisage that the would, in the foreseeable future, be increased boating activity in that southern part of the lake?
Yes, that's my understanding, and I think Mr. Espy also makes that observation that if that marina goes ahead, that could see a change.
And then the next area that I understand you're concerned about is that Mr. Espy hasn't actually assessed the effects of the changes to the zone requirements that are being sought for these two particular areas, the increased building coverage, where they might be located, protection or otherwise of vegetation that might provide screening at the moment. So, as I understand, you're saying he hasn't really done an evaluation or assessment of the impacts of what this particular submitter is asking for in those two areas.
That's correct. It Yes, I think it's fair to say it's light on detail. My evidence in chief kind of had a high-level stab at what the landscape potential issues and opportunities were for each of these RVZ locations, and for both of them, both the Holiday Park and Loch Linney, was my view that it needed quite a nuanced approach to make it appropriate from a landscape perspective. And I do not consider that the provisions promoted by Loch Linney deliver that level of detail and specificity that to deliver that outcome.
So although at one side of it you think that's possible,
I do,
that there could possibly be some a development of the nature of a rural, of what's anticipated in a rural business zone in both these two Loch Linney sites.
Yes.
But we haven't, you're saying that the submitter hasn't done that specific, detailed, nuanced analysis to allow what is appropriate in that ONL to be revealed.
Yeah, I guess cutting to the chase, when you do that detailed landscape analysis, it generates a whole range of location-specific outcomes that the zone would need to achieve to secure an appropriate landscape outcome, protecting landscape values and the like. As I say, I'd go back to my evidence in chief and say that, that's what needs to frame the appropriate outcome there.
And without that, the zone or the rules within the policies and the rules within the zone can't be written to ensure that's achieved.
Yes.
And to ensure that the effects on the ONL are protected.
That's right. That's my view.
All right. Do you want to...
I wonder if we should take some lunch.
Does anyone else have questions on Loch Linney? We could draw a line under that.
Well, then.
Or they might.
Yeah. Can I just briefly address the elephant in the room, which is Loch is a body of water.
Loch
is somehow you secure a doorway.
Sorry. Right. Appropriately chastised. Thank you. How do you say Linney?
Linney.
Right. Is it both of us that you would chastise?
I couldn't possibly point the finger at an expert witness.
Well, I'll take this, the cards route and say now, talking about the Y Creek site. You commented that Mr. Espy has provided some visualisations from the lake. I had the impression that obviously he could only take, he was dependent on the weather of the day, that the overhead conditions were quite dark, and so the question is how representative is the views that Mr. Espy has provided to us of what it would look like in clearer weather conditions, clearer and lighter weather conditions.
Well, I agree there's a concern around that. It's normal to rely on photographs on a good day with good visibility. I guess what we as landscape architects have to do is kind of model the worst case scenario, if you like, and that's what that would do. I guess I'll leave it there.
I understand.
Good, thanks.
Well, in that case, we'll adjourn for lunch and come back and talk about the hardware campground.
Thanks.
Yeah.